Morning. Today's daf in Erevin Lamed Hey. We are in Lamed Dalmed Beis. We are starting this morning with the Mishnah. Here in the third parak of Erevin, Erev Tchum is our topic of discussion, as it has been since the beginning of the parak. It's a long parak. We have already turned to this parak on Chof Vav Amed Beis. So it's been a little bit. The first topic of discussion in this parak has been the food that one is going to be using in order to set up his Erev Tchum. In order to create a new Makom Shvisa, he's creating a new point of residence, new point of center. And the second topic was accessibility. We're still on the topic of accessibility. And that idea is that in order for an Erev Tchum to be good, it has to be accessible to you. You have to be able to reach it, both halachically and physically. So we've been discussing halachically for the last number of daf on the Mishnah Lamed Beis Amed Beis. Mishnah covered the topic of the fact that you and the Erev have to be in the same domain. You and the Erev either has to be in a Rishus Rabbim or in a Rishus Yachid. But if you're in a Rishus Rabbim or the Erev is in the Rishus Yachid or vice versa, so then that Erev is not going to work because you cannot obtain it. You can't retrieve it during the Beinash Mashas period, which is the time in which you are acquiring the Erev Tchum. A lengthy discussion and a difficult discussion ensued from the Mishnah Lamed Beis Amed Beis until we got to right over here. And now we're up to the Mishnah Lamed Dalet Amed Beis, and we're discussing accessibility from a physical standpoint. You have to physically be able to reach it. Our Mishnah is going to be discussing this aspect of accessibility. We begin the Mishnah. Nasna b'Migdal. So you put the Erev Tchum in a safe place. You lock it away in a safe. It's not exactly a safe. The Mishnah describes it as a tower. It's some sort of chest. It's an armor. And Avada Maftech, and it's locked, and you lost the key. So I raise the Erev. The Erev is going to be a fine Erev. It'd be no problem using such an Erev. Rashi right away says that you and the Erev in the same domain. Rashi says, the Migdal is located in the surrounding area of Rishus Yachid. So no longer are we describing what we described previously, where the Erev is in the Rishus Yachid and the surrounding area was the Rishus Rab, and everything is in the Rishus Yachid. And Rashi says, "You have a bay maptech, we have a bay shemisser." Now, if you had the key, there'd be no problem whatsoever. The huve ruva rishus yachid, because both you and the eruv are in rishus yachid right now. Problem is, you lost the key. Okay, so according to the Tanakama, the eruv is fine. And Rabbi Eliezer, back to the Mishnah, Rabbi Lazar Omer im enu yodesh shemaptech memkamo enu eruv. If you don't know where the key is, the eruv is not going to be a good eruv. Okay, so what we have clearly in the Mishnah is a machlokus. But what we don't have clear right now is what the machlokus is over. What are they arguing about, the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer? You don't know where the key is. Rabbi Tanakama says that's fine, and Rabbi Eliezer says no, it's not fine. And what is the nature of the dispute? Va'amai, and it brings us right up to the Gemara. So hu b'makom echad ve'ru b'makom acher hu. So at first the Gemara, for a moment, thinks that you and the Erev are in different locations, and immediately the Gemara. The Gemara knows that you and the Erev are in the same location, but if you can't access the Erev, so it says if you're in two different locations, right? That's Rashi and the Mishnah. I'm sorry, the Rashi and the Gemara. Rashi writes over here, Nihida Tavai Rishus Yachid Ninu, they're both in Rishus Yachid, Kevin Delamasi Shakalei, Havalei, Kishne Makamos. So it's like you're in two different locations. So why should it be that the Erev is going to be good? Meaning, can we have some better understanding of the Tanakama, who says that the Erev is going to be good? If you can't access it, it should be no good. So what the Gemara is going to be doing now from here, till the remainder of the sugya, all the way to the Mishnah coming up on Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, is the Gemara is going to give three different pshatim amongst the Amoraim, why it is that the Tanakama says that the Erev is in fact good. And once we explain the Tanakama, then we have to, of course, have to go over the foil. What's Rebbe Elazar Shita? That the Erev is, in fact, not going to be good. So we start off with the first pshat, first of three pshatim. First one's going to be offered by Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel Damer Tavayu, Hachal b'Migdal Shel Levenim Askinan. V'Remeir Hu De'Omer Poches Lechatzchila V'Notel. So the first pshat is that what is the construction of this tower? Up until this point in time, we assume that this tower, this Migdal, this chest, was made out of wood. It was like an armor. It was a wooden chest. That was the assumption going into this. And Rami Shmuel say, Yeah, but that's not the case over here. Case over here is it's made up of bricks. And it's made up of bricks, and the Tanakhama is going in accordance with the Shita of Reb Meir, who says that what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to deconstruct it. And afilu chatchila, it's no problem whatsoever. And for this, the Gemara is going to be quoting the Mishnah in Beitza. Mishnah reads that now we learn Beishim Ilu Peros. You have a house filled up with fruit, sosum, and it happens to be a closed house. V'nivchas, and it breaks down to mimakom hapchas. So, if it happens to be a break in this house, in this sealed home, so then you're allowed to take it. But according to the Tanakhama of this Mishnah, only after it broke, meaning you're not allowed to do it. And Rameir Omer poches v'notel lechatchila. And Rameir is of the opinion that you're allowed to do this, and even from the standpoint of lechatchila. Now the Gemara, before finishing its answer, so just a quick follow-up. Amar Rav Nachman Adam Rishmoa, Avira de Livne. Yeah, but in that Mishnah Beitza, so it was the understanding of Rav Nachman Ada that the bricks over there were not plastered together. There was no mortar connecting the bricks together. They were just simply bricks stacked one on top of another. Probably alternating, right? Like bricks are normally laid, but still, there was no mortar. So Achanami Bavir to live next to the Gemara says fine. So we're going to have to say the same thing over here, meaning that Rav Meir is making that Mishnah and Beitza where the bricks are just simply stacked one on top of the other. Okay, good. So it's the same thing over here, meaning we're just clarifying the Ukimta of Rav and Shmuel in our Mishnah over here. Now what we have over here is a Mishnah and Beitza which tells us that when the bricks are laid one on top of another, so there's no mortar connecting the two. So according to Shitas Rav Meir, lechatchila, one is allowed to remove the bricks. And now, what the Gemara is doing is it's taking that sheet of Rameir and applying it to our Mishnah over here. That's the Migdal that we're describing. The Gemara says, okay, but it's not a full explanation. So, okay, but meanwhile, going back to the Tzugyan Beitza, it happens to be the Rebbe Zera says that this Hetzer is only for Yontav and it's not for Shabbos. Why is it a Hetzer specific to Yontav? Because we know, as we're going to be learning with Masechta Beitza, so on Yontiv, there are a number of allowances that are given that you will not have on Shabbos, especially when it comes to food. On Yontiv, you have a special inyan of Simchas Yontiv, so you have to be happy on Yontiv. So for that, so there's a number of allowances that are given. Notably, this idea of Reb Meir, that you're allowed to open up the sealed house, lichatchila, again, bricks, and there was no mortar between them. So, but Reb Meir says that for Simchas Yontiv, you're allowed to do it lichatchila. Had it been Shabbos, so you would not have been allowed to do that on Shabbos. So this answer of Rav and Shmuel, we're trying to explain the Mishnah here in Shabbos, but really the Hetzer is only limited to Yontif. So the Gemara is going to say, it's a little difficult, but the Gemara is going to say it, Hachanami b'Yontif. So the Gemara says, okay, so our Mishnah over here is talking about a Yontif as well, meaning that the Erev that was set up in the Migdal was specific to Yontif and not to Shabbos. Now that's a difficult shot, admittedly, because we're explaining here a Mishnah in Erevin. Erevin, we presume, is going on where you're setting up the Erev Tchum for Shabbos. You also have to set up an Erev Tchum for Yontif as well, a point where, I'm not sure if we made it clear, but let's make it clear. Tchum is something which is prohibited both on Shabbos and on Yontif. Meaning on Yontif you do have an allowance to carry, but we're not talking about carrying over here, we're talking about Tchum. We're talking about the perimeter, the limits in which you can walk outside of your Makom Shvisa. It is as much an issue on Yontif as it is on Shabbos. Okay, but still it's difficult because now we're saying that our Mishnah is only specific to Yontif, not on Shabbos. But okay, fine. So, Ihachi, Hani Dikani Allah. So, I'm sorry, before we get to the next part, so basically here's what we've done so far in our Mishnah. Tanakhama says that you are allowed to access the Eruv that was locked away in this armoire, in this chest, and you lost the key, and according to the Tanakhama, it's good. So, the first answer of the Gemara is the answer of Rav and Shmuel, and that is that the armoire is made up of bricks, not of wood. It's not mortared together. It's not plastered together. And furthermore, it would only work on Yontiv, not on Shabbos, and it's only going according to the Shita of Rav Meir. Okay, that's obviously saying a lot in terms of offering a pshat in the Mishnah. But okay, it's a pshat. Difficult as it may be, it's a pshat in the Mishnah. Okay, with all that stated, it's going to be difficult as we're going to be reading together a Braisa. Yahachi Hani Diktani Allah. Now, on this, we have a Braisa. Now, this is a Tosefta commenting on our discussion about the locked Eruv in the chest. And that is, Rebbe Lazar Omer, in Be'ir Avad Eruv, in Besada Avad, Ain Eruv o Eruv. It depends whether you lost it in the city or whether you lost it out in the field. What's the difference between the city and the field? So we're going to explain in just a moment. The Gemara is going to explain. Rashi explains it over here. We're going to explain in just a moment. So, but the Ibi Yamtov, Maliir, Malisada. Now, on Yamtov, what difference does it make whether you're in the city or whether you're out in the field? Meaning that in the city, there's an allowance to carry, which we're going to explain how that works. How you can carry in the city, but you can. For now, let's just say it. You can carry in the city for reasons we're going to explain, but out in the field, you can't carry. Now, if we're talking about Yantiv, there's no issue of carrying. Meaning, on Yantiv, there's a perfect allowance to carry. Carrying is one of the malachas that's mutar on Yantiv, and you're allowed to carry for food. You're also allowed to carry for any purposes based on the principle of mitoch. All this is in the Gemara in Beitza. So if we were talking about Yantiv, there should be no distinction between the city versus the field. You're simply allowed to carry. This distinction only works if we're assuming that we're talking about on Shabbos. So Chisur Mechzer of Ahachi Ketani. So the Gemara says, fine. So in this Brisa that we just learned and the Tosefta that we just learned, so there has to be missing portions of the Brisa. We're going to fill in the gaps. And as we turn now to the top of Lamed Hamad Aleph. So Nasnu B'Migdal V'Nal B'Fanav V'Avan HaMavteh Harei Ze Erev. So here we're going to start off with the Brisa from the beginning. You put the Erev in a chest. You locked it. You lost the key. The Erev is still going to be a good Erev, but Medvar Mamor and B'Yom Tov. This is only talking about a Yom Tov B'Shabbos in Eruv Eruv, but on Shabbos it won't be an Eruv. So again, so we're working now with the Pshat of Rav and Shmuel. This allowance to break open this chest is only applying to Yantiv, not on Shabbos. Okay, and again, by the way, we're going to also add, right, as we're reading this into the Brisa, all the details that we had previously. It's made up of bricks, not of wood. The bricks have not been sealed together, so they're just simply bricks stacked one on top of the other. Okay, everything we set up until now. So that is the first part of the Brisa. Nimsa mafteach bein beir bein besadein ein eruva eruv. Now let's say you find the key. And as Rashi points out over here, we could even be talking about on Shabbos itself, meaning which is much of a chiddush, meaning during the Bein Hashemashos period, you didn't know where the key was, but you found it, and you found it on Shabbos. So whether it was in the city or whether that was in the field, the eruv is not going to be an eruv because right now it's Shabbos itself, and there's no way to bring the key over to the chest. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, and now the distinction of Rabbi Eliezer, and that is Be'ir Eruva Eruv, and Besada In Eruvo Eruv. So again, this distinction of Rabbi Eliezer, that if I find the key in the city, the Eruv is going to be good. If I find the key out in the field, it's not going to be good. And here the Gemara explains now. So Be'ir Eruva Eruv K'Rabbi Shimon. If I find the key in the city, so then the Eruv is going to be good Eruv because we're subscribing to the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, which is, and we've seen this already earlier in the Masechta, and we saw this back in Masechta Shabbos as well, in the 19th Perek, Da Amar Echa Gagos Ve'Echa Chatzeros Ve'Echa Karpifos Rishos Achas Hein Lekelim Sheshavta B'Sochan. So the sheet of Rabbi Shimon is that if I have these various Rishos Hayachid, which are not houses, but enclosed areas, and it doesn't matter whether we're talking about the Gag, the Chatzer, or the Karpif, if they are contiguous to one another, one is allowed to carry from a gag to a chatzir, from a chatzir to a karfaf. And you can just simply jump from enclosure to enclosure. And as we already pointed out, even if they're owned by other people, Shitas Rabbi Shimon is that vis-a-vis Shabbos, they could be all viewed as one rishus, as one domain. That Shitas Rabbi Shimon. It only works for a kli that starts off Shabbos in the enclosure. If it started off in the house, you can't do it. But if it started off in these enclosures, then you're allowed to carry it from one to the other. However, besada in eruva eruv kerabanan. But if you find out in the field, so then the eruv is not going to be an eruv because if you find it in the field, so then they subscribe to shitas chachamim. The shitas chachamim means to say that you will not be able to access the chest, meaning that you won't be able to open up the chest and get to the Erev. Okay, this is all now going to be Pshat number one. So let's quickly recap. In Pshat number one of the Mishnah, the Tana Kama, who's of the position that if you lost the key, the Erev is going to be good Erev. So Rav and Shmuel offer the first Pshat, which is that we're talking about a chest made up of bricks. They were not sealed together. They were not plastered together. And our Mishnah is following Shitas Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir of the Mishnah in Beitza, who says that on Yontav Lichatchila one can remove the bricks in order to access the food inside. So our Mishnah is following that viewpoint. And then, of course, that means that our Mishnah is also only limited to Yontav, and it wouldn't apply on Shabbos as well. And then there was a Braisa that was a little bit difficult to read, and the Gemara reread the Braisa in order so that we could fit this Pshat into the Braisa. Adkan, that takes us now to the end of our first round of how to understand our Mishnah. Okay. Comes out now that in truth, and Rashi does this on the bottom of the previous Amud, comes out now that really what we have is a total of three Shitas. Not two Shitas, but three Shitas. Take a look, go back to the Rashi on the bottom of the previous Amud. So Rashi over here organizes all three of our Shitas. Rashi writes, Dibra Amaskal, the Im Basada Ein Eruvo Eruv. So, the Gimel Machlok is Bedavar, right? Three lines into the Rashi. And now it comes out that there are three positions. One, L'tanakama bin b'yir b'misada eruv v'eruv d'matzi sasarle. So, according to the Tanakama, the eruv is going to be good regardless of where the chest happens to be located. Our brick chest, regardless of whether they're in the city or whether they're in the field, so you're allowed to break it open, again, with our circumstance we just described, and that sheet is Tanakama of our Mishnah. Then there are Rebbe Eliezer, but as Rashi points out over here, there really are two Rebbe Eliezers. Rashi continues, Rebbe Eliezer, de Masis and Beim Yirim Misada, Ein Eruvo Eruv, de Mister Lamasi Sasser, Veleisle de Rebbe Meir. So, first of all, the Rebbe Eliezer of our Mishnah does not subscribe to Shitas Rebbe Meir, so you can't break open the chest. The Isuye Nami Lamasi. And how about bringing the key over if, in fact, you find it? So, that's also not an option. Because the Rebbe Lazar of our Mishnah is not subscribing to Rebbe Shimon, and therefore, even if I did find the key, there is no way to bring the key over to the chest because Rebbe Lazar of our Mishnah is not subscribing to Shitas Rebbe Shimon. And then finally, Rebbe Lazar de Braisa, and there's one more Shita, and that's Rebbe Lazar of the Braisa. Rashi writes, Savalak Rebbe Shimon. And Rebbe Lazar of the Braisa is subscribing to Rebbe Shimon, which is that if I find the key, and if I find the key in the city, and the key happened to have been in a different chatzir, but there's a way of getting the key over here by just simply jumping from one enclosure to another, assuming there is a path that one can go to bring it from the chatzir that the key is found to the chatzir that the chest is in, assuming that you can jump from chatzir to Gad to Karfaf, whatever. As long as there's a direct way to get there through these various enclosures, so then that would be okay. That's Rebbe Lazar of the Braisa. Okay, that was a lot of information in a short amount of time. So those are the three Shitas, and that was all as per the explanation of Rav and Shmuel in the Mishnah. That is one approach. The Gemara is now going to give two more approaches. Number two, Rabbi Rav Yosef Darmi Tavai. We're on Lamed Hamad Aleph, and we're about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. The Gemara now, second approach offered by Rabbi and Rav Yosef. Hacha b'migdol shel eitz askina. No, we're going to go back to our original assumption. Chest was made out of wood. Marsaver klihu ve'ein binyan b'kelim ve'ein stir b'kelim marsaver olhu. So, and now the question becomes the following. What is going to be the status of this chest? Is it a kli or is it an ohel? If it's a kli, so then breaking it open would be fine. Because ain binyan b'kelim ve'ain stira b'kelim. This is the machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel that we saw back in Maseches Shabbos. And so if it registers, if its status is a kli, so then breaking it would be fine. However, if its status is an ohel, so then as an ohel, now it's a structure. It's a bona fide structure on Shabbos. And so you're not allowed to break it because that would be stira sohel. That would be the deconstruction, and that would be a violation of the malacha of soser. So the Gemara says this is now going to be our second shot in terms of how to define the Migdal. Is it a Kli or is it an Ohel? If it's a Kli, that's Shitas Tanakama, you're allowed to break it. If it's an Ohel, that's Shitas Rebbe Lazar, and you're not allowed to break it. The Gemara says now this machlokus of whether the Migdal is a Kli or an Ohel, so it is precedented. Where else do we see this? Uvipukti Dani Tanai did not. We're going to turn to our Mishnah in Zavin that's going to point to this machlokus, seemingly. This Mishnah in Zavin is going to be predicated on the following. When a person's a Zav, and he is going to be an Avatuma, so that Tuma is transmittable, like every Avatuma, where the Tuma is transmittable. When it comes to a Zav, so he transmits Tuma in a number of ways. Normally, when we talk about the Tumah of Azav, the transmission that's most popular in terms of discussion is going to be Tumas Medras, when he sits on an item that was meant to sit on, or when he lies down on an item that was meant to lie down on. Here, the Gemara is going to be talking about another aspect of the transmission of a Tumah from a Zav, and that is what's called Heset. Heset is when you're responsible for the movement of an item. Even if you don't physically touch the item, but you move the item, that is also going to be transmission of Tumah. Let's say, for example, Rashi gives this example. Let's say you're wearing gloves. So you're not physically touching the item, but you're moving the item. So that's another way to transmit the Tumah. So here the Mishnah in Zavin describes the following. Hikish, Algabe, Shita Teva Umigdal, Tameim, Rebbe Nechemi, Rebbe Shimon, Mitarin. So the Mishnah brings down a machlokes between the Tanakama versus Rebbe Nechemi and Rebbe Shimon. Let's say the Zav were to push, were to move Shita Teva Umigdal. Obviously, all different examples of chests. So according to the Tanakama, so the Tumah has been transmitted. According to Rabbi Nechem and Rabbi Shimon, the Tumah has not been transmitted. And now, we have a machlokis. What's the underpinning of the machlokis? My la b'hakimiflihi, marsavar klihu, marsavar owelhu. So presumably the machlokis is the designation, the definition of the migdal. Is it a kli or is it an ohel? And the Gemara right now is assuming that if it's a kli, so Tumah has been transmitted. If it's an ohel, Tumah has not been transmitted, and l'chora, that's a machlokis. If that's correct, if that's a machlokas. So now, this supports Rabban Rav Yosef. Same machlokas over here, vis-a-vis Shabbos, and the ability to tear it down, to deconstruct. If it's a kli, you're allowed to deconstruct. If it's an ohel, you're not allowed to deconstruct. The Gemara, however, does not love this pshat. Amar Abaye. Specifically, Abaye does not like this pshat. V'tizbra v'atanya. Now, let's go back to that Mishnah in Zavin, and let's go and see if we're right about this distinction between kli versus ohel. So Abai says, we're not right about it. He says, I'll show you. Let's go over the following braisa. Va'atanya, ohel, v'niseit, tame, kli, ve'eno niseit, tahor. So the braisa says very clearly, if you have an ohel and our zav moves it, so then it's tame. If it's a kli and the zav does not move it, it is tahor. The braisa says unequivocally that whether or not it's a kli or an ohel is, in this case, has no relevancy whatsoever. The only thing that's critical is, did you move it or did you not move it? If you moved it, it's tame. And even if it's an ohel and you moved it, it's tame. And if it's a kli and you didn't move it, so then it's tahor. V'ktani seifa, and if that weren't enough, let's keep going. V'imayu nisotin tameim. If they were moved, they're tame, zaklal. Niseit machmas kochel, tame. Machmas ra'ada, tahor. If it moves directly, so then it's tame. If it's machmas rada, you jump on the ground, you create vibration, some sort of reverberation, and it moves as a result of that, it's going to be tahor. Okay, but the braisa says it in very clear terms. As a general rule, it's really all a function of movement, direct movement. And so this distinction between ohel and kli just does not bear out. And so the Gemara basically rejects the explanation that the distinction of ohel versus kli, it's certainly not the way to explain the machlokis in that Mishnah and Zavin. And presumably, Abai is also going to reject it over here in terms of the application of our machlokis in the Mishnah in Erevin. So, Elam Rabai, Dekule Amma Hesed Machmas Kocho Tamei, Machmas Rada Tahor. So, Abai says, look, before we turn back our attention to our Mishnah, let's stay in that Mishnah and Zavin. Let me offer a pshat in that Mishnah and Zavin. If you directly move it, the Shita Teva Omegdal, so then it's Tamei. If you, meaning the Zav. And if it's indirect movement through ra'ada, through creating vibration, jumping down, up and down on the ground, and it's moving because of the reverberation, so then it's tahor. So let's assume that those are the two clear positions. Those are the points of agreement. V'hacha b'ra'ada machmas kochel askinan. Over here, you moved it, but machmas kochel. U'v'hacha miflgi marsavar have a hesed or marsavar lo have a hesed. Moving it, machmas ra'ada. Exactly what that means. Rashi, Birada Machmas Kochal, Shehikish Alehem Mamish, Velonitkan Velo Hustu Ella Ra'adu. So let's say that it's a big kli, and you push it, and the only thing that it does is that it vibrates. It doesn't actually move position, but it vibrates. That's the Rashi's description of Ra'ada Machmas Kochal. So you're directly applying force to it, but it doesn't move, it just simply vibrates. That's the machlokes between the Tanakama versus Rabbi Nechemia and Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so with that stated, so Abaye obviously now has totally deconstructed, pun intended, he's totally deconstructed the argument of Rabban Rav Yosef, that the issue over here is whether it should be labeled as an ohel versus labeled as a kli. He gave a nupshat in the Mishnah Zavin. And so, so I'll say that's our second pshat in our Mishnah, Rabban Rav Yosef, although seemingly obliterated by Abaye, but the second pshat is that whether or not you can get to the Eruv, whether or not the Eruv is going to be good Eruv, is going to be a function of whether or not the Migdal has the status of a kli, or it has the status of an ohel. Umas nisim b'may mukmin Allah. So now, once Abaye has rejected the pshat of Rav and Rav Yosef, what's Abaye's pshat going to be? Well, it could have been that Abaye is just simply going to go back to Rav and Shmuel, but the Gemara is now going to note that Abaye and Rava offer their own pshat. Abaye and Rava d'amri tavayo, Abaye and Rava offer their pshat in the Mishnah, in our Mishnah. B'mino b'kaltu b'masna askinan. So we're talking about it's a lock, but it's not a lock that needs a key to open it up. It's a lock where it's tied up using string. And what you're going to do is you're going to bring a knife in order to cut it. Now, Tanakama Savar Laka Rabbi Yossi Damar. Now, bringing a knife in order to cut it. So, can you do that? So, that's exactly the machlokes between the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer. The Tanakama of our Mishnah subscribes to the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, which is the main position regarding the topic of Moksa. The Amar, the Mishnah in Shabbos. First Mishnah of the 17th parak of Shabbos. So kol hakel nitalam b'Shabbos chutz mi masar gadol v'yasei shel machresha. So any kli you're allowed to move on Shabbos, meaning once something has the status of a kli, so then you can move it. That lengthy discussion we had over there, tzarech gufo, tzarech mekomo, abaye, rava, right, all in the 17th parak of Shabbos. But meanwhile, you can move. You can, for need, for purposes, you can move pretty much any kli on Shabbos. Notable exceptions: a large saw and the plow. Or the linchpin of the plow, the yaseisha machareisha, those are very expensive items. That's what's called muksa machmas chiseron kis. But with a couple of exceptions, so you're allowed to move every kli. To take a knife on Shabbos and to use it in order to cut open the rope, so that you're allowed to do, that's no problem whatsoever. You would not be violating muksa. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer savalaka Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah subscribes to the sheet of Rabbi Nechemia. Damar afilu talus afilu tarvad ein italan elat zorch tashmishan. Rabbi Nechemia, as we've seen already a number of times in Masechet Shabbos, takes the most strict position when it comes to muksa. And that is that for kelim on Shabbos, so not only are you limited in terms of which kelim you could use, you're also limited in terms of the usage of each of the kelim. You can only use a kli on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Nechemia, only for its designated task. I cannot repurpose a kli to use it. Well, not really repurposing, but I cannot use a kli for a utility that it normally is not normally used for. A knife is normally used to cut food. According to Rabbi Nechemia, the only thing you could do with a knife is cut food. If I want to take a knife on Shabbos in order to cut open a rope, a string that's holding my food in, Rabbi Nechemia says you can't do that because that's not the primary use of a knife, and you cannot use it on Shabbos for anything other than the primary use. So that means to say that Rabbi Elazar subscribes to Rabbi Nechemia, and therefore there's just simply no way to open it up. That's going to be a third way to explain the machlokus of our mission between the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer. If you think about this, it's a little bit difficult. The way I presented it is like Rashi, and if you think about it, it is a little bit difficult. Because basically, what hurdle do we have to jump over in order to break it open? So according to this last pshat of Abaye and Rava, the hurdle is going to be the hurdle of moksa. Now, if you think about it, what is moksa? Moksa is an issur derabanan. Making all this really difficult, meaning moksa, moksa and being an issur derabanan. So what have we learned now for the last number of days here is that inaccessibility is according to the Chachamim, any kind of inaccessibility, meaning I'd be violating either an Issa D'Oraisa or an Issa D'Rabbanan. But then, of course, there's the Shita of Rebbe, meaning Rebbe Yehuda Anasi. Rebbe's of the position that if I'm violating an Issa D'Oraisa, so then that's considered inaccessible. But if all I'm doing is violating an Issa D'Rabbanan, according to Rebbe, that's fine. In other words, the time that you're kona is during Ben Hashmashos, and during Ben Hashmashos there's no shvus, there's no isuri de rabbanan during the Ben Hashmashos period. And so what comes out now is that the hurdle that we have to jump in order to open this is going to be the isur of muksa. The isur of muksa is a din de rabbanan. If our Mishnah is subscribing to Shita's Rebbe, so then muksa would not be an impediment. Meaning, because muksa is a de rabbanan, we're talking about during Ben Hashmashos, it should be okay to open up. Meaning, even if Rabbi Eliezer does subscribe to Rabbi Nechemya, so what we're looking at violating is Nisra de Rabbanan, not Nisra de Raisa, so then presumably you can open it up. So it is a difficult pshat that we just offered. A difficult meaning it definitely needs more explanation. Just as a suggestion, maybe the Shita of Rabbi Nechemya it is muksa. But it's muksa on some sort of higher level, on higher threshold. It's difficult. Let's just leave it off at like that. A difficult shot in terms of when all said and done, it's still just muksa. I'm saying that in context, meaning it's just muksa vis-a-vis during the Ben Hashmashos period when we are looking to acquire our Erev. Okay. That kind of takes us to the end of our first sugya of the morning. So again, the Mishnah brings down that if the Erev is locked away in a chest and you don't know where the key is, and now you are looking for this Erev to be kona your Erev Tchum, so your Makom Shvisa, so is it going to work? Machlokas in the Mishnah between the Tanakam and Rebbe Lazar. Tanakam says it will work, Rebbe Lazar says it will not work, and so what we have presented is three different approaches of how to understand this Machlokas of Rebbe Lazar and the Tanakama of our Mishnah. And just as a quick recap, so according to Rav Shmuel, we're talking about where the chest that's locked in is made up of bricks, and they were not cemented together, and we're talking about Anyantiv, and our Mishnah, our Tanakam of our Mishnah, is holding like Jesus Rav Meir, which is that you're just simply allowed to remove the bricks in order to get to the Erev inside. And Rebbe Eliezer disagrees. And to what degree does Rebbe Eliezer disagree? A discussion in the Gemara. That was approach number one. Approach number two is Rabban Rav Yosef. Machlokis in the Mishnah between Tanakama and Rebbe Eliezer is how to designate the Migdal. Is it a Kli or is it an Ohel? If it's a Kli, Ein Stira B'Kelim. If it's an Ohel, so Yesh Stira B'Ohel. That's the second way to explain it. And the third way to explain it is Abai and Rava. Abai and Rava say that it's not a lock and key. It's just simply that it's tied up. And now I need a knife in order to cut it open. Can I get a knife in order to cut it open? So Shita, the Tanakama of our Mishnah, is that yes, because our Tanakama subscribes to Rabbi Yossi. You could take a Kli on Shabbos, even using it for other purposes. And Shita's Rabbi Lazar of our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Nechemya, that you're not allowed to take a knife and use it for its non-main purpose. Okay, Adkan, that takes us now to the end of our first sugya. A lot of things which I bypassed just out of the function of time is an important Tosos on the Amud Beis of Lamed Aleph, where Tosos discusses in detail opening up packaging, meaning breaking through something in order to get to food on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. Our Mishnah over here obviously has a lot of reservation regarding it. At least the first sheet of Rav Shmuel, the only time you could do so is if it's bricks and it's not mortared. But under normal circumstances, Rav Shmuel seems to be of the position that you can't break something open, even though that's mekalkel, even though it's just simply destruction, when all you're doing is just trying to get to the food inside. And so the implication you get from our discussion is that breaking open the package is no good. But meanwhile, there are other Gemaras that we did together in Shabbos not so long ago that described how you are allowed to break open in order to get to the food inside. And so Tosfos has a discussion, and we bypassed it, but that's just the daf. We bypassed it in terms of Tosfos's approach is that sometimes you are and sometimes you're not allowed to break open the packaging, and it depends on the integrity of the packaging. Okay, much more to discuss over there. But that's Tosos that we bypassed on Lamed Aleph Beis, Tosos Divrei Maskil VeAmai. We're going to continue in the Mishnah. We're on Lamed Hamed Aleph and Nizgalgal. And we're going to be discussing now a number of cases here in the Mishnah where we are losing the Eruv. And you'll see what I mean in terms of the examples. So the first one is Nisgag L'chutz L'tchum. The Eruv started rolling. Okay, you put the Eruv in a circular package, in some sort of spherical package, or just a strong wind. Whichever way it happened, and it rolled. And not only did it roll, but it rolled outside of Tchum. And this happened before Shabbos began. If it happens after Shabbos begins, so that's fine. Because it served its purpose. It was Kone Makom Shvisa. But it rolled, and it rolled outside of Tchum. So that's one example of a lost Eruv. Number two, Nafalav Gal O Nisraf Truma Vinitmes. I'm sorry. Nafalav Gal O Nisraf. Sorry. Second example of lost Eruv is that it basically was a rubble collapsed on top of it, or it was burnt. Okay, simple examples of it being destroyed. Well, the first one is it wasn't destroyed, it was just simply under a pile, or it got burnt, or Truma v'nitmes, or it was Truma and it becomes Tame. And all this happened before Shabbos began, before Ben Hashmashas began. So mi be'ol yom ein eruv, so it's not going to be good eruv. Mishachashecha is the eruv. Now, if it happens after Ben Hashmashas, so then it's going to be good eruv. Now, im safek. Now, let's say you don't know. You got there, you set it up before Shabbos. You got there after Ben Hashmashas, and you saw that any of the above just happened, as we just described. So now we're looking at the safek. So what do we say regarding a safek of an eruv tchum? Remeir Rav Yehuda omrim arizeh chamar gamal. So both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda take the position that you are stuck. Gemara has a great description of describing how you're stuck. Chamar gamal, donkey and camel. Donkey and camel, one is led and the other one is leading you. And basically you're getting pulled in two directions. And the Gemara is using that as an analogy to describe over here, in that basically you're going to get pulled in two directions. Because consider, and over here Rashi says all this, and I'm just simply going to paraphrase, where you have now two possible makum shvisas, your original point of center and the one that is newly created. But you don't know which one has taken hold. And by the way, it goes without saying, but let's say it, only one can take hold. In other words, you can only have one makum shvisa. You wanted to create a new one, but you don't know if it was effected because of the suffix. You don't know whether it was lost before or after Ben Hashmashas. So now you're stuck because now you have to take into consideration that either one of them has been affected. So as let's say we have two points, A and B. So now you walk from A to B. So that you're allowed to do. A may be your makom shvisa, which means now that you cannot walk anywhere past B. Let's assume that the 2,000 amas away from one another. You can't walk anywhere past B because A may be your makom shvisa. Okay, but at the very same time, however, from point B, you can now walk back to point A, but you can't not take a step to the right from point A. Why? Because B may be your makom shvisa. So all you are now is stuck between A and B, because A may be your makom shvisa or B may be your makom shvisa. You are chamar gamal. So you're stuck between those two points. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Amrim, safek erev kasher. So Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon say it's a safek erev and it's going to be kasher. Meaning that the erev that you set up, we're going to assume is going to be good. Even though it's a safek, but it's going to be good. I'm Rabbi Yosef. And then Rav Yossi says that Thomas gave the following testimony, and that is in the name of five Zakenim, that when you have a Suffolk Erev, it's going to be fine. It's going to be kosher. We start with the Gemara. Nizgalga Chotzotchum. So the Gemara over here just adds one small detail in terms of it rolling out. And that is Amarev Loshanu Elosh Nizgalga Chotz La'arba Amos. In order for it to roll out and be disqualified, it had to roll out more than four amos away from where it currently is. Meaning that when we're talking about your makom shvisa, so your makom shvisa affords you an area of dalet al dalet amos. It's an idea which we entertained just a couple days earlier. Back on Lamed Beis Amid Beis. Interesting, by the way, it happens to be Rava over there as well. Anyway, that the Makom Shvisa gives you an area of Dal Vadal. It's like, that's basically your house. Now, structurally, it's nothing, but still, the Makom Shvisa gives you a Makom Dal Vadal. So that means to say now that where you set up your Eruv, it is considered a domicile. It's like a residence of Dalal Adalin. And that means to say that you can walk to that area and you can walk within the entire perimeter of the house. I'll do this by way of analogy. Let's say that your Tchum Shabbos ends at a house. At the entrance, not the entrance of the house, but just slightly interior to the house. What Halacha allows you to do is walk throughout the entire house, even though good parts of the house are going to be outside of your Tchum. But once some of the house is within your Tchum, so the whole house now is an area where you're allowed to walk. Good. Same thing over here. So your 2,000 Amos takes you to your Makom Shvisa. You're allowed to walk within the entire perimeter of your Makom Shvisa, which is Dalal Adalin. So that means to say that the only way that your Eruv is going to be disqualified is only if it rolls out outside of that Dalal Amos. If it's still within the Dalal Amos, so now it's accessible and it would be good. Fine. Next point of the Gemara. Nafal of Gal, let's say it falls, rubble falls on top of it. So at this point in time, we have a Havamina, and the Gemara telegraphs. And the Gemara says that our Havamina is that, well, I could just simply pick up the rocks and get it. And if I'm picking up the rocks and getting it, so what's the problem? Now, rocks, of course, are Muksa, but Muksa is an Issur Rabbanan, which, by the way, parenthetically, makes my question that I asked previously just a little bit stronger. Meaning that previously we were talking about the machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Nechemiah about Muksa. Okay, the Gemara over here clearly is articulating that if Muksa is the only thing preventing you to your Eruv, so according to Rabbi, it'd be fine. So, Kasak Adachdi by Masi Shakale, Lema Masisin to Loka Rabbi. The Ikarebi, however, called Avashu Mishum Shvos Logazur Alav, Beinash Mashos. Okay, now it would seem like our Mishnah is not going like Rebbe. And that's uncomfortable, meaning because these Mishnayos all seem to be going like Rebbe. The Mishnah back on Daf Lamed Beis clearly is going like Rebbe. That we've already established. And then the Mishnah on Lamed Daled, the Gemara also wanted to say it was going like Rebbe. Not as clear cut, but the Gemara wanted to say that. What about our Mishnah over here? If all I have are rocks on top of my Eruv, so pick up the rocks and move them. It's only Muksa preventing you. And Rebbe's of the position that if it's just an Issur Rabbanan preventing you, the Eruv is going to be a good Eruv. That's considered accessible. So the Gemara says, no, afilu tema k'Rebbe, l'tzricha d'bayi mar v'chatzina. So the Gemara suggests, no, that really what we could do is we could give a little more ukimta in our Mishnah, and so that our Mishnah is still going like Rebbe. It's not just I'm moving rocks, but in order for me to get my Eruv, I have to get a shovel. And I have to dig. And that would be a malacha, that would be an Issur d'oraisa. And it could be that that's what our Mishnah is describing, and our Mishnah is going afilu k'Rebbe Yudan Nasi. So many cases in our Mishnah that are describing a lost Eruv, and like the Gemara classically does, as it will do right over here, so many cases, each case must represent some unique chiddush. Utsricha. So, okay, good. So that's exactly what the Gemara is going to do now. Each one of the cases are necessary. The Itan and his Galgal. If I only had the case of the Eruv rolling, Mishum Delesa Gabe. Well, there the Eruv is gone. It's outside of my Tchum. Aval Nafal of Gal, the Isa Gabe, Ema Lehave Eruv. But if some rubble fell on it, I know where the Eruv is. It's just buried underneath. The Itan and Nafal of Gal, Mishum Demichse. Now, if the Mishnah only gave us the case of the Eruv being buried under the rubble, okay, I can't see it, it's covered. Avon Nisgago, Zimnan Dasi Ziko, Maise Lei. So, Emela Have Eruv. But in the case of the rolling Eruv, just like it rolled in one direction, it could roll back. So, maybe an argument can be made that at least the potential of it rolling back would mean now that the Eruv should not be disqualified. So, that's the Chiddush of the case of the rolling Eruv. Good. So, chidushim in these two cases of the Mishnah. E onisrach truma v'nitmes lama litana nisrach. Now, this case of the additional cases of it being burnt or the truma becomes tmeya. What are we adding with these cases? Lo dicha kocha de Rav Yossi. To teach us the position of Rav Yossi. Tana Truma Venitmis Lodicha Kochadra Meir. So basically we have now two chidushim over here. As far as the case of Nisrach is concerned, so it's there to teach us the chidush of Rav Yossi. Meaning Rav Yossi says that in a case of Suffolk, Still, the Erev is going to be good Erev, even though it was burnt, and we don't know when it was burnt. Still, that's a case of Safek, and Rav Yossi is going to be Mako. As far as the case of Truma Tmeya, so that's the Tisha, the Shita of Rebbe Meir. Meaning, even though we're looking at it right now, we know it became Tame, but we're looking at it right now, still, the case of Safek, we're going to be Machmir. So, both of these positions are highlighting how strongly Rav Meir feels about his viewpoint, and how strongly Rav Yossi feels about his viewpoint. Okay, so that kind of takes us now to the end of that short discussion in terms of why so many cases and what each of the cases is coming to highlight. We are now at the top of Lamed Hey Amud Beis and a discussion within Shitas Rav Meir. Rav Meir says that in a case of Safek, so we're going to be Machmer. You are Chamar Gamal, you are stuck now between the two possible Makom Shvisas. And what the Gemara is going to be discussing is, are we going to find consistency within the Shita of Rav Meir? The Sovereign Rav Meir spake al chomer v'atzanan. The Gemara says, why don't we consider the following Mishnah? Mishnah in Mikvos. Tamei. Sheyarad litvol. So let's say the person for sure is Tamei. And he needs to tovel in the mikvah in order to achieve Tahara. And now, Safek tovel, Safek lo tovel. So the first example is, he's not sure if he toveled or if he didn't tovel. Okay, so he was somewhat sleep deprived. Later in the day, cannot have a good memory as to whether or not he toveled. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. V'afilu tavel safek tavel ba'arbaim safek lo tavel ba'arbim sa'a. Or, and we're just going to give a whole bunch of different sfekos. A second possible safek is, these are not compound. We're not building one on top of the other. These are just various sfekos. The second safek is the mikvah. Did it have the requisite 40 sa'a or did it not? V'chein shnei mikvahs ba'achas yish ba'arbaim sa'a va'achas ein ba'arbaim sa'a. Or another suffix is that there were two mikvahs, one next to each other. One had the requisite 40 sa, the other one didn't. He toveled in one, he didn't know which one of them he toveled in, the kosher one and the non-kosher one. So in all these cases, sfeiko tame. So in all these cases now, he doesn't know for sure if he toveled or if he toveled in the kosher mikvah, so we're going to be machmir in all these circumstances. That's only if we're talking about a tumah de araisa. Ava betumah kala. But if we're talking about a Tumah Derabanan, examples of Tumah Derabanan kagon, Shalchol Ochlin Tameim V'Shasa Mashkim Tameim. We're going back to the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, Yud Ches Davar, the 18 decrees that were enacted by Beis Shammai that Beis Hillel eventually agreed to. And here are a number of examples. These are all Gezeros. They are rabbinic decrees. They are Tumah Derabanan. So one example is where you ate food that's Tamei, or you drank a beverage that is Tamei. Min haTorah, you're not Tamei, but mid Rabban, you are Tamei. V'haba Rosh HaVeruba b'mayim shoavim, or you put your head and the majority of your body into water that was in a kli. Ocean of la Rosh HaVeruba al Rubo Shoshalug in mayim shoavim, or you showered your head and your body, and the majority of your body, within three lugim of drawn water. The yardlit bowl, suffik tavel, suffik lo tavel. So these are all examples of Tumah Derabanan. Go back to Shabbos. I speak to all of us, myself. Go back to Shabbos for an explanation of why the Chachamim were goes during these cases anyway. But these are all examples of Tumah Derabanan. So now, Tumah Derabanan. And now you have a suffik. Suffik tavel, suffik lo tavel. And I'm going to read this quickly because these are all the same examples. V'afilu tavel, suffik tavel, bar b'imsa, suffik lo tavel, bar b'imsa. So in all these cases, because the tumah to begin with was only a tumah derabanan, so we're going to be mekel on a safek, and we're going to say that really the tefila was a good tefila. And Rav Yossi metame, and Rav Yossi says that the person is still going to be tame. So what we have over here is the following of this lengthy brisa that we just went through. This lengthy Mishnah that we just went through, second parak of Mikvos. So what we just learned together is that Shitas Rav Meir is that when it comes to a suffix, so we're going to be Mekel. And meanwhile, in our Mishnah, by a suffix Erov, so we're going to be Machmir according to Rav Meir. So what we have over here seemingly is an inconsistency within Shitas Rav Meir. Explains the Gemara, because Rav Meir, Tchum D'Oraisa Ninu. So okay, so what we'll say is as follows. We know that there's a machlokus as to whether or not Erev is a, and Tchom is a Din D'Oraisa or a Din D'Rabbanan. Not Erev, but Tchom. Whether Tchom is a Din D'Rabbanan or a Din D'Oraisa. And we know this to be a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Kiva. The Chachamim say that Tchum is a rabbinic institution, that one is not allowed to walk more than 2,000 amas out of your Makom Shlisa, but that's only on a rabbinic level. And Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that's an Isser Daraisa. And later we'll discuss the machlokes in more detail. What the Gemara now is suggesting is that Rav Meir subscribes to the Shita of Rabbi Kiva, where Tchum is a Din Daraisa, and so therefore, when we're talking about now the Suffolk Eruv, it's really on a Suffolk Daraisa. Okay, now, on one hand, super reasonable suggestion, we know that Rav Meir was a student of Rabbi Kiva. So it'd be fair now to suggest, aside from it now fitting into our discussion, it's also fair to suggest it because we know that Rav Meir was a student of Rabbi Kiva. Now, the Gemara says, okay, it is a fair suggestion, but we have evidence to the contrary. And that is the following. So, let's say you cannot be Mavliya. Now, over here, we're talking about measuring. And we're going to spend later in this Masechta a much more detailed discussion of how to measure Tchum. It's done with 50 Amma ropes. 50 Amma ropes, and you're going to measure, and you're going to measure until you get to 2,000. And the discussion over here that the Gemara is making reference to is the following. How do I measure inclines? So there are two ways to measure inclines, meaning you have a mountain or you have a valley going down. So one way to measure inclines is just simply follow the terrain. That's one way to measure. There's another way to measure inclines, and that is ignore the incline, but rather drill a hole right through. Now, you don't have to physically do this, but ki'ilu, you're going to drill a hole right through, and you're going to measure right through. Obviously, measuring through the mountain would result in a tremendous leniency because you're obviously going to be afforded more distance. So, Reb Meir is quoted as saying, or they quote Reb Meir, who says, Shamati, I heard, Shemekadrim Baharim, that you're allowed to drill through the mountain. And that means to say that you don't have to measure over the terrain, you can measure through the mountain. Now, that is a leniency. Now, that leniency only works if you assume that Tchum is a din derabanan, not a din daraisa. And the Gemara makes that point very clear. If you're of the position that Tchum is a din daraisa, mi mekadrin, you're not allowed to drill a hole through a mountain. V'ha amar of Nachman, amar rabba baravua, im mekadrin lo ba'ari miklat, v'lo ba'egla arufa, mimei shehen shel Torah. So when you have to do measurements on a Torah level, two examples the Gemara gives of measuring on a daraisa. One is Ir Miklat, and the second is Egla Rufa. Ir Miklat, so we know that when you go into a city of refuge, so you receive refuge. In other words, you are protected over there. You are now in a sanctuary where the Rodef, where the Goel Hadam does not have the right to kill you. That's not only true being in the Ir Miklat, but even if you're within Tchum of the Ir Miklat, so you are receiving this protection. You are given immunity once you arrive at a tchum. How do I measure tchum of the Ir Miklat? Now, this is a din d'araisa. We are talking here about life and death and the allowance of the Goel Adam to kill you. This is a din d'araisa. So over here, you are not allowed to drill through the mountain. You have to measure with the terrain and with the slopes. And meanwhile, that's one example. And the second example would be Egla Rufa. When measuring which city is going to be more proximate to the corpse that's found, so there also you have to be measuring with the terrain. And so these are measurements that operate on a Torah level, and so therefore you cannot drill through the mountain. And so Reb Meir over here is quoted saying that for Tchum on Shabbos, you can drill through the mountain, so that would seem to indicate that Reb Meir is of the position that Tchum is a Durabban and not a Duraisa. So the Gemara says, Lokasha Hadideh Hadurabe. So the Gemara says, okay, Reb Meir himself holds that Tchum is daraisa. That's his own personal shita. What he was quoting in terms of drilling through the mountains, so that he was quoting his Rebbe. Now over here, we can observe that when he says quoting his Rebbe, which one of his Rebbeim? So it can't be Rebbe Akiva because we know that Rebbe Akiva holds that Tchum is daraisa. So when it says that it's his Rebbe, even though we don't know who he is, we know who it's not. Meaning it's not Rabbi Akiva. We could speculate, and I will, we could speculate that's Rabbi Shmuel, meaning we know that Rabbi Meir had two Rebbeim, right? We learned that earlier in this Masechta. One was Rabbi Akiva, the other was Rabbi Shmuel. Remember, he first learned by Rabbi Akiva, didn't know what was going on. then went to Rabbi Shmuel, got the Bekiyas, and then went back to Rabbi Akiva. But it's only speculation. I don't know this for sure. But anyway, but the position that Tchum is de Rabbanan, Rabbi Meir was quoting not his own position, but rather his Rebbe's position. And I'm just adding, it's not Rabbi Akiva. Deganami Diktan, we learned today, and in fact, it's correct, because Bezu Amar Rabbi Gusai Bar Yanim Yishim Rabbi Meir, Shamati Shemekadrin Baharin Shmamina. So, and we know this to be so because if you read carefully, when he said that you're allowed to drill through the mountain, he says, the Rameer is quoted as saying, Shamati, I heard. Meaning, this is not my own position, but I heard somebody else say it. My own position is, you're not allowed to. But I heard somebody else say, you are allowed to. So, the position of Rameer himself is, Tchum is Dar Raisa. And that's why, when it comes to a Suffolk, so he's going to be Machmir. Okay, Adkan, this is a good pausing moment. We'll pause, we'll review, and in Yirtzeh Hashem, we continue tomorrow. Okay, this morning we talked about an Erev that's locked away in a chest, and you don't know where the key is, and now is this Erev going to work for you to create a new Makam Shvisa? Machlok is in the Mishnah between the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer. Tanakama says it's going to work. So Rabbi Eliezer says it's not going to work. What's the Machlokus in the Mishnah? The chest is in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, so it's not the case of the tree. They're both in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid. What's the problem? The problem is inaccessibility again, but over here inaccessibility in terms of, am I allowed to break open the chest? So Tanakhama says you are, and Rabbi Eliezer says you're not. What's the halachic consideration? Three possible ways to explain it. One is Rav and Shmuel, which is that the chest is made out of bricks, uncemented, and you're just simply lifting the bricks off. Tanakhama here is following the Shita of Rav Meir of the Mishnah in Beitza. Second possibility is that the Machlokas Tanakam and Rebbe Lazar is predicated on whether the Migdal has the status of being a Kli or that of an Ohel. If it's a Kli, so Ein Stira Bekelim. If it's an Ohel, Yesh Stira Be'ohel. The second possibility, the third possibility is Abai and Rava. Abai and Rava says that it's not a lock in key, but rather it is a lock in string. String is right now holding it together, and I need to cut it. So I need to get a knife. Can I get a knife in order to cut it? So that's the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rebbe Lazar. Tanakhama says yes, because the knife is not muksa. And according to Rebbe Eliezer, subscribing to Shitas Rebbe Nechemia, the knife is muksa, and therefore I can't get the knife in order to cut it. Second discussion today, you lost the Erev. Numerous examples given in the Mishnah of how the Erev was lost, rolled away, buried under rubble, incinerated, or the Erev was made up of Truma and becomes Tameh. So various examples where it was destroyed. If it's destroyed before Ben HaShemashos, no good. Destroyed after Ben HaShemashos, it's fine. Served its purpose. Safek, Machlokis in the Mishnah, whether it's good or no good. According to the Shitas of Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda, it's Chamar Gamal. You're stuck now between your original Makom Shvisa and what you wanted to be your new Makom Shvisa. You have to take into account that they both are a Makom Shvisa, and you're stuck between the two spots. Shitas Rabbi Yossi is that it is, and Shitas Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon is that the suffix is going to be the Erev is going to be good even under the conditions of a suffix. First discussion of the Gemara, all the cases, each one of them highlighting a specific chiddush. We went over the chiddush of each one of the cases of the Mishnah. And the second discussion of the Gemara, which covered us through most of the Amud Beis, to the point where we got to, and that is consistency within the Shita of Reb Meir. Reb Meir in the Mishnah says that a Suffolk Erev is going to be, we're going to be Mekel, we're going to regard the Erev as a good Erev. Meanwhile, when it comes to Suffolk on a Tvila, so Reb Meir, sorry, let's start that again. Let's do that, let me do that better and correctly. According to Reb Meir, a Suffolk, we're going to be Machmir. And it's not going to be good. Okay? Better stated. Correctly stated. And now the problem is that Mishnah in Mikvahs. The Mishnah Mikvahs tells us that if the person is Tamei Midar Raisa and Tovel's in the Mikvah and the Tefillah was only a Suffolk Tefillah, many different examples of that, so then the Tefillah is no good. If the person is Tamei Midar Rabbanan and then Tovel's in the Mikvah, the Tefillah is going to be good. That is Aliba Deshitas Reb Meir. And so what we have over here is an inconsistency between a Suffolk mikvah, Suffolk tvila, versus our Suffolk Erev. So how do you resolve it? So the Gemara says, the way you resolve it is by saying that Rameir holds that Tchum is a din d'araisa, not a din d'rabbana. And so therefore, now it fits. Now Tchum is more analogous to the person being Tameh min haTorah. Does Rav Meir really hold that Tchumim are d'araisa? And the short answer is yes. Even though he records somebody, one of his Rebbeim saying that Tchum is d'rabbana, that was one of his Rebbeim. But he himself holds that Tchum is d'araisa. Ad kan.